Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow bookbinger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. Today's story is one I've been hanging on to for a while because it has a decidedly Octoberish feel. Are you a mood reader like that? I have an author whose stories get me just the right bit of spooked, so I try to hang on to them until Halloween. I'm not sure why, because I don't get into Halloween or scary movies, but the creepiness seems to fit the time of year when fall is slipping into winter. Or if you live in Arizona like me, when the unbearably hot is shifting to the pleasantly cool. This story is written by Beverly Toomey, who has worked as a used bookseller for the last 10 years, allowing her to greatly expand her personal Tolkien collection. When she's not lost in the stacks, she can be found drinking vast amounts of tea, snuggling with her two cats, reading fantasy novels, writing in the wee hours of the morning, and plotting ways to play more Dungeons & Dragons. Today's narrator is Peter Franson, host of Christian Geek Central. Stick around to the end or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from both the author and the narrator. For now, please enjoy Skullduggery by Beverly Toomey.
Skullduggery, noun, an instance of dishonest or deceitful behavior, trick. With the bright noonday sun shining overhead, the necromancer was hardly subtle, dressed in a long black cloak. The tall, slender man was an out-of-place shadow, swiftly striding across the grounds of the College of Magi. There were three buildings, each reflecting the study of magic that took place within. A large temple of majestic pillars housed the divination students, with an observatory tower for their star charts and a hospital wing for quick access to their healing abilities when magic went awry. The abjuration wing was on the lower level of the temple, keeping the students close to the ground and able to run their drills and powerful magics in open spaces. Enchantment and evocation shared a castle made of rich earth, brick, and stone. Lovesick animals crowded the grounds, eager to catch a glimpse of their enchanters, whilst the wiser creatures stayed further away in the event of a misplaced fireball. The illusionist building was always changing. It had the habit of disappearing entirely after the bells had rung, leaving late students scrambling in order to find it. The necromancer ignored the stares of the students, lost in his own memories, and thinking back upon his last visit over a year ago. He sat in the head archivist's office underneath the carefully enchanted portraits of the head wizards. The necromancer had always thought it odd that they kept them here, until he realized it was less for prestige and more for accurate wanted posters should the wizards revolt. His least favorite portrait hung behind him, right above the door. The enchanter who had done the portrait of Olivier Sardis had quickly retired afterwards. From the top of his jaundiced, balding head to the ends of furious dark eyebrows, the long face of the necromancer's mentor radiated disapproval. It had been years since he'd been in the presence of that awful man, but the painted glare still made the hair on the necromancer's neck rise with anxiety. He reached over to pet the black cat curled up on her own chair beside him. "Easy, Void," he murmured to her. "Easy." His familiar blinked her large green eyes at him, giving a small chirp of comfort. She wasn't fooled by his attempt at remaining calm and graciously ignored his damp hands on her fur. The head archivist finally entered. She was a tall black woman with a pair of thin-framed glasses resting atop her gray and white braids. Dressed in long purple archivist robes, she took a seat behind the large mahogany desk. "Welcome, sir," she said, offering her hand. "I am the head archivist, Yolanda Etchings." "The necromancer," he replied with a swift shake of her hand, noting the calluses and firm grip of a trained illuminator. "Ah," she said with raised brow, "one of those, are you?" "If you mean one of those who worked very hard for their title and wishes to maintain anonymity, yes," Tell me, how does one exactly remain anonymous when they are the only master of their specialty? The necromancer's shoulder blades prickled. Two. There are two masters. Archivist Etchings folded her hands in front of her. I'm afraid not. It is the reason we have called you here. Your mentor, Master Olivier Sardis, has died. She nodded behind him. Congratulations. The portrait shimmered on the wall, the old man replaced by a younger individual of swooping golden hair, blue eyes, and sharp cheekbones. The necromancer could barely remember looking so young. Do you need a moment? Etchings asked, lowering her glasses to her nose. Death wasn't exactly unwelcome news to the necromancer. It often was simply step one, but he hadn't imagined that Sardis would actually die, or that his freedom from his mentor would feel like a loss instead of victory. I'm fine. The void snorted in disbelief at his side. Etchings began to open a large folder on her desk, arranging the papers so that not a single piece was at an unprofessional angle. The College of Magi wishes to congratulate... She looked up once more, waiting for a name to be given. He silently refused. The necromancer, she sighed, scribbling it onto the parchment in front of her. On your new position as sole master of the necromantic arts. It is a position of great prestige, as I'm sure you know. It's been many years since Sardis resided at the college, but we have a copy of his will. The necromancer squirmed in his seat. He left you everything. The words were like sharp glass upon his skin. What? Etchings held up a piece of paper. In the event of my untimely death, I, Olivier Sardis, master of the necromantic arts, hereby leave all my worldly possessions, my title, and best wishes to my apprentice. Etchings took a note but continued. I bequeath to him my post in Yorick's grave, the cottage, and all the contents therein. The necromancer stared at the paper in front of him, the words swimming across his vision. You seem surprised, said Etchings. I understand that you may have been expecting to hear this all from him yourself, but he's already been buried, and... Is this where he ran off to? The necromancer demanded. A small mountain town in the middle of nowhere? Etchings folded her hands in front of her. The nature of the position is highly classified. It is unfortunate that he was called away before he could finish your studies. However, you seem to have done well enough on your own. There was a sharp pitch ringing in the necromancer's ears as if he'd stood too close to a church bell. He'd been fighting tooth and bone for 15 years to master his magic. Meanwhile, his former mentor was having a holiday. The void stood up in her chair, her back rising up with a stretch before climbing onto his own lap. She glared at Etchings, making her own disapproval known before she began to knead the necromancer's legs with careful pinpricks from her claws. The post that he has left you requires a permanent resident in Yorick's grave. Etchings explained. A temporary leave of absence can be arranged with proper notice if you should require it. I don't want it, said the necromancer through gritted teeth. Sardis was always ordering him about in life. It seemed that his mentor wished to continue even in death. I understand, said Etchings. In that case, you will need to train a replacement to fill the position. I'm a necromancer, he said, not a teacher. Etchings looked down her nose at him. Sir, with respect, you do not have a choice. The necromancer avoided Archivist Etchings this visit. He'd come unannounced and without paperwork for his intentions, which would undoubtedly cause alarm among the scribes. In the early days, there hadn't been a need for paperwork, simply a shovel, a strong back, and a clear night with no disturbances. Eventually, necromancy advanced beyond the need for a shovel to save the backs of the scholarly magicians. As a safety measure, both for the innocent and the magicians in question, the necromantic archives were made. Hidden beneath the grounds of the College of Magi, The archives allowed necromancy students a controlled environment to poke at their cadavers in peace. It was a grand endeavor, and truly a marvel amongst the rest of the world as history was preserved as efficiently as a mummified corpse. The series of catacombs, tombs, and mortuaries were meticulously kept by the scribes and chroniclers. Often magic practitioners themselves, these two groups were charged with documenting the activities of the magically inclined, protecting the area from ill-advised civilians and wizards who got a particularly bad idea in their heads. Like the necromancer. He came prepared, of course. Only a fool went underground without a familiar. With her tail curling around his ankles, the ever-vigilant void was all the necromancer would need. He began his descent, stepping down the stone steps in the middle of the courtyard. There were 9 levels of the necromantic archives, creating a massive spiral that tunneled into the earth, each circle smaller and more dangerous than the last. But first were the waiting rooms. These were simple enough. It wasn't often that other magicians passed further than this point, so the archivists made it at least comfortable. At this level, there were a few lingering beams of light, illuminating the comfortable chairs and well-worn carpets that were strewn across the stone floor. The second level contained a group of offices. The necromancer passed quickly through here, keeping his steps purposeful as he passed the wooden doors to the scribes and the archivist guards. They would not be an issue. Not for him. The third was an equally empty funeral parlor. Various rooms stretched out on either side for a variety of ceremonies, whether the deceased requested burial, cremation, or composting. This level was kept for the sake of community service. The necromancer had always loathed these assignments during his school days. He'd been faced with grief over and over again, and could never truly tell the family that he'd had a lovely chat with the deceased just the day before. One had to be careful during a funeral as well, since being anything less than comforting often caused the caskets to twitch and rumble in unsettling ways. The fourth level lay quiet, the entirety of the level a massive operating theater. Various cold seats and desks circled downward to the center where an empty stone table lay. The necromancer lingered longer than he intended in his old classroom. The seats had never been full when he studied. Instead, he and his fellow students, only 7 others, were given front row seats for their lectures. At the back of the room lay another staircase, already smelling of sharp acids and preservation fluids from the mortuary below. The necromancer drew his long black cloak closer around his shoulders as the chill of the fifth level set in. There was no sign of welcome in here, only strict scientific study. The rooms were locked behind panes of thin but opaque glass so that only the shadows of those inside could be seen. It was unsightly business, and the necromancer had little stomach for the recent dead. Thankfully, his goal was within reach, as at the end of the hall lay the 6th staircase. The 6th level was the true beginning of the archives. Instead of illuminators' desks, long tables lay in the center of the room with various crypts lining the walls. The air was kept dry, perfect for preservation. No one, neither student nor tutor, was allowed to bring a flask that was less than twice enchanted into this space. Here, necromantic students and morbidly curious magicians could study the less dangerous artifacts for their research. The shelves were packed. Grimoires of necromancers from ages past, with their sketches and theories, lined one entire alcove. Another shelf carried various jars of wisdom teeth, plucked from a variety of students and kept due to their excellent tonic-making properties. There was a pair of lungs, floating in fluid that breathed on their own. Guarding it all were several empty suits of once-animated armor. It had taken years before anyone had gotten close enough to realize that they were animated skeletons inside. The bones were removed after a failed safety inspection. There was a set of dice said to have been carved from the bones of some terrible gambler. They were carved as to always roll poorly, costing many a student a good bit of coin. Finally, resting on top of a shelf and covered with dust, was the finger bone of Saint Marigold, often used by students as an oracle for games of spin the bone. The students would gather in a circle, spin the finger bone like a compass, and the pairing would be destined to be together. After a few less-than-ideal pairings erupted into horrible matches, the archives put an end to such games and privately updated their record as to which finger bone it might have been. These were all trinkets and baubles, enough to entertain a curious mind for centuries, but the real prize lay carefully hidden below. The necromancer had spent years on this level of the archives, digging through every tome for answers. He knew there was more to this magic than what Sardis had shared, and he was determined to find every last thread. But the archives were strangely lacking on anything beyond the basics of necromancy. It was as if all the deeper knowledge had disappeared along with the necromancer's mentor. It had taken him weeks to work up the courage to go to Yorick's grave, but he had. He faced death every day in his work. He could face an empty house. It was there that he'd found every single missing book from the archives, stuffed away in his dead mentor's house. Yet in all of Sardis's library, there was one artifact that his mentor hadn't stolen, the primary source for all necromantic knowledge, the most prized possession of the necromantic archives. The necromancer intended to complete his collection. He reached into his cloak to remove a parchment map. The void hopped on top of the table beside him to get her own look. "Sixth and onward will be an issue," he said, pointing them out to his familiar. "The archivists managed to layer enough magical protections from each school. We'll have to keep our wits about us." The void gave a low meow in agreement. "But there is a code," said the necromancer, rolling up the parchment once more. "Indeed." As a student, the necromancer had been furious with how every archivist answered the question of what magical protections are down there. Everyone would simply smile and reply, "Indeed." He'd found the parchment map in his hands tucked away in between Sardis's personal journal and a cookbook. There, in faded lettering, he discovered what the archivists truly meant by the word. It was an acronym, or rather, an initialism. INDEED stood for each protection that those descending would encounter. "The last letter is a bit damaged," he explained to the void as she sniffed the paper. "It looks a bit like the letter C, but it'll do." The necromancer put the parchment away and rolled up his sleeves as he scanned the walls. "First, illusion." The stairwell was hidden. It wouldn't do for students to wander off into the deeper levels of the necromantic archives by accident. In earlier times, when the number of necromancers abounded, it was often said that you could lose a person in the archives, never realizing they were lost until you discovered their corpse 100 years later. Every student, necromantic or not, had tried pulling books from the shelves to open a secret passageway. The iron sconces for various candles had to be welded to the walls with how often a curious person had accidentally ripped them off in search of a lever. The illusion was, of course, in none of these things, but carefully hidden away in the janitor's closet. The first sign was that the illusion managed to produce a back corner in a circular room. The overstuffed janitor's closet filled with dusty brooms and other long-neglected supplies. The necromancer pushed aside mops, cleaning jugs that were caked with mold, and a rusty bucket before reaching into the dark beyond. His hand passed through the wall.
"Courage, Void," said the necromancer. "We've just begun."
The darkness continued as he stepped through, an inky black that left him blind to even his own hand in front of him. Carefully, the necromancer reached into his cloak, pulling out a singular beeswax candle. He held it up to his lips, whispering a spell across the wick until a small blue flame sparked to life. The blue light reflected in the void's eyes. She headbutted his leg affectionately before stepping in front of him to lead the way, for who knew darkness better than the void herself? There were only a few steps down, the stone painted black to prevent any light from reaching them. The necromancer proceeded carefully, taking the steps one at a time while keeping an eye on the candle flame. The light only reached a few feet in front of them, enough to catch the shine of the void's fur. The absolute silence of the dark bothered him more than he cared to admit. Necromantic flames, such as the one in his hand, didn't even offer the comforting crackle of a normal fire. His breath sounded loud in his own ears, and every footstep rang out like a gong. Even the gentle tap-tap-tap of the void's claws upon the stone was unsettling.
Right, he thought. The second circle, N, should be easy enough to cross. After all, it's only...
His foot bumped into the void. She looked up at him with her eyes glowing blue. He started to ask what was wrong until he heard it. The gentle tap-tap-tap continued, even as the void stood still. The necromancer whirled around, thrusting the blue flame into the darkness behind him. The tapping stopped, the candlelight revealing nothing beyond the endless dark, until a soft breath blew out the flame. Void! The necromancer shouted as grasping hands snatched his wrist, while another pair leapt up from behind to wrap around his throat. The necromancer tried to shrug them off, the sound of splintering bone against the stone steps reverberating in the dark. His familiar howled and hissed, darting about his ankles as she attacked further enemies. The necromancer slammed himself backward, rewarded with a loud crack as his captor was battered against a stone wall. But the wall wasn't only stone. He could feel them, hands seeking and grasping at his hair, his cloak hood, looking for another way to hold him. Furious, the necromancer shouted into the dark. Kulut a la Kavele! The hall lit up with crackling blue necromantic light, seeking out each and every undead that held him. The light sparked up each of the skeletons, one directly in front of him, three more to the right, chaining their limbs to the ground below. A half-broken skeleton had clutched the void into its own ribcage and froze with its hands still wrapped around her. The necromancer huffed, pulling himself away from the frozen skeletal hands on the wall. He adjusted his cloak, kicking aside a chattering skull and sending it further into the dark. I will not be bested by my own magic. The second circle, N, was, of course, necromancy. He knelt to free the void, breaking apart the rib cage with his hands so she could leap out. The cat was an angry ball of fluff, shaking and furious. Immediately, she plopped down onto the floor to groom herself. Even in the gloom, the necromancer couldn't help but smile fondly at her. They'd been brought together in this same dark place. Sardis sent him down here on his own as a punishment when he heard the void screaming. She was one of two friends he'd had as a student, his own small shadow. Come along, Void, he said. You're up next. Her fur clean to her satisfaction, the Void gave one final shake from the tip of her nose down to her scrawny tail. With a chirp, she led the way. The necromancer lit his candle again as he stayed away from the walls of bone. A new set of steps appeared, and the endless dark gave way to the brightness of stars.
Divination,
the necromancer breathed in awe. Galaxies surrounded them on all sides, stars streaking past in the sky while distant planets followed their orbits. The necromancer's footing was sure, even if, when he looked down, he continued to see the endless stretch of space and time. He'd never had much patience for divination, finding it a particularly elusive magic relying on conjecture versus results. But the necromancer couldn't deny that it was the most beautiful of the magical arts. It was also a domain in which the void excelled. It was why cats had maintained their status as the superior familiar for thousands of years. The void sat in the center of the room, her eyes reflecting the starlight with wide curiosity and wonder. The necromancer snuffed the candle, placing it back into his cloak before he knelt beside her. May I? It was always important to ask the void's permission, especially when the spell would require her full cooperation. The void's tail twitched before she looked at him. She headbutted his hand in agreement, and then flopped onto the galaxies below for a belly rub. The necromancer obliged, slowly murmuring the spell beneath his breath with each gentle stroke of her fur.
Laina minuel silmasi ya apuna.
The necromancer blinked and his sight changed. He could see himself kneeling next to the void, feel his hands still stroking her fur, but the starry skies around him had changed. The colors were dimmer, but through the darkness he could see the shapes of the walls and the edge of the spells, or rather, the void could see them. Her body still her own, the void rolled back to her feet, taking a long look around the room for his benefit. The necromancer heard her meow echo in her ears as well as his own as she batted at his leg for him to stand. Wobbly as a newborn, the necromancer stretched his hands out in front of him so that he would catch himself if he fell. With the void's gentle nudging and meows for direction, she led him northwest. They traveled light years through space in the span of a few breaths. He borrowed the void's sight until they reached the stairs, hidden beneath the yawn of a massive black hole in space. Shaking his head, the necromancer dropped the spell, his sight rushing upward and back into his own eyes. The void had leapt up next to him, perching on a shelf he could no longer see. Instead, it looked as though she was sitting on top of a large ringed planet.
"Good girl," he said, scratching her behind the ears. "Best girl."
Next up in the code of Indeed was the Ease. The Ease blast them with absolutely no indication as to what would come first. He had studied evocation and mastered the elements of fire, water, earth, and air, rudimentary magics that every basic magician began with until their specialties appeared. However, enchantment was by far his most ruthless enemy. A mixture of compulsion and charm effects, such magic repulsed the necromancer. Sure, he twisted the undead to suit his whims, but to manipulate the living? That was a step too far. Unlike the other levels, a row of torches illuminated the long curved hallway, clearly showing the steps beneath. The necromancer sniffed with disdain.
"Of course they would want to show off their never-ending enchantments."
The void shrugged in return, padding softly in front of him and wisely keeping to the center of the hall. They walked for a while, the hall curving downwards. It was only after the third or fourth circle that the necromancer stopped.
"Wait," he said, carefully reaching towards the wall with a piece of chalk.
He scratched the quick shape of a bird on the wall.
"There's something wrong."
This time the necromancer counted the steps. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and at the 13th step, his sketch of a bird appeared once more. He went around once more just to be certain, but as the bird appeared a second time, he knew.
"A never-ending staircase," he groaned.
"Typical." It was an architectural marvel from the minds of a particularly malicious archivist. The sketches of it were still hanging in the communal library to leave people wondering if it was merely an optical illusion or reality. Yet here it was, twisting his own steps into madness. He took a position with his back to the torches, staring at the wall across from him where the light did not seem to reach. If he remembered correctly, the way out wasn't merely to circle the stairs until he lost interest, but through the center. But the moment he started to reach the edge of the light, his feet turned him in the other direction. It was almost muscle memory, two steps forward towards the black, and then he'd find himself taking six more steps back into the light. The necromancer growled, snatching one of the torches from the wall to see if he could spot the confounded enchantment that was keeping him away. He stepped forward, then again. Finally, with the edge of black at his feet, the necromancer felt the enchantment give way. Then the torch exploded in his hands. The rest of the fire on the wall answered, bursting forth with great torrents of flame. The necromancer dropped his torch, watching it fall into the pit in front of him. The void hissed, leaping onto the necromancer's shoulders for safety. But the edge was too near, and despite how slight the void was, the momentum was enough. With arms flailing like a windmill, the necromancer and screaming void fell into the black below. The wind rushing past them was stronger than mere gravity. The necromancer grabbed the void, stuffing her underneath one arm as he gestured wildly with the other to make the necessary runes.
Valancivet animidue lento!
It started as a spark on his fingertips, and then a burst of blue electrical energy burst from the rest of his arm, zipping down to the dark below. It hit the rapidly approaching ground like a lightning strike. His magic sprung back up towards him, wrapping around his legs and righting him in the air with a sudden stop mere inches from the ground. The evocation wizards were quick to point out that necromancers stole their flight spells. The necromancers reminded them that if there was a loose skeleton horde, you would want them to arrive sooner rather than later. The necromancer's hands were shaking as he landed. Meanwhile, the void refused to come out from beneath his cloak, firmly burying herself under his arm as much as she could. It was so much. The necromancer cursed every last wizard of all the magical arts for creating such a terrible maze of danger for the sake of priceless knowledge. There was a part of the necromancer, one that he didn't listen to often, reminding him he could have simply asked for the artifact. The archivists prided themselves on how they shared their knowledge. But asking a favor would only lead to more questions, paperwork, and an escort who would record every last detail of his work. No, that wouldn't do at all. He had to do this alone, with the void, and descend every last irritating magic circle.
"Hold on, Void," he murmured, petting the solid brick of furry fear beneath his cloak. "We're nearly there."
He could feel the cat groan against his ribs. The last gate, and by all the stars and saints, it had better be the last, was the most unknown to the necromancer. The code of Indeed indicated that the final trial would be another divination circle, but as he cautiously stepped forward into the dark, conjuring up a blue flame onto yet another candle, there wasn't a single glimmer of a star. Instead, the darkness faded away into a foggy, gray gloom. The necromancer couldn't quite pinpoint where the light source came from, but even with the stones beneath his feet, he could have sworn that he stood in the middle of a bog. His footsteps echoed against some unseen walls, and slowly, ever so slowly, the fog gave way to tall, looming shadows on either side of the room, stretching out beyond his sight.
"Void," he whispered, "we've made it."
The necromantic archives, the true and forbidden realm of history and legend, lay before him. Towering to the right of him, pressed into some imaginable corner, was the skull of a giant, with eye sockets wide enough to drive a cart through. Rows of upright coffins with glass lids lined the shelves, each skeleton and cadaver resting in undisturbed slumber. The necromancer wandered past long-dead kings and queens, sorcerers of old whose magic still flickered like dying embers beneath the glass, and creatures far beyond imagination, from an extinct Tasmanian tiger, a preserved set of griffin wings, and a row of skulls from deep-sea crocodiles with obsidian teeth. The void squirmed in the necromancer's arms until he released her. Plopping on the floor, she gazed up and around, taking in the sights. She sniffed some of the lower shelves. Her tail, upright and happily alert, lingered along the spines. The necromancer's mind whirled with possibility as they went deeper in. The coffins gave way to stonework shelves, skulls upon skulls, carefully stacked and ordered in alphabetical and historical significance. To think, the archivists kept this all locked away, simply waiting for his magic to unlock it all. "What do they plan to do with all of this when it is my turn to die?" he thought aloud. He certainly wasn't planning on teaching anyone necromancy, despite the college requiring it. If his plan worked, and it would work, he wouldn't need to. The air grew dry, the earlier moisture another illusion. No archivist worth their parchment would let anything damage a library. But the enchantments here felt so strong, the necromancer swore it was slowly leaching away at his own body. The void gave an excited chirp, winding herself around the necromancer's shins before darting off into the dark. She came back for him, her meow impatient and insistent. The shelves of the archive gave way to a singular chamber made of pure obsidian. The rock's glistening surface echoed the necromancer's reflection back at him, twisting it into sharp shapes. The chamber had 9 sides to it, one to reflect the levels that hid the ultimate treasure. The walls were bare, and dust lay heavy upon the ground, indicating that it had been centuries, if not longer, since anyone had dared breathe here. In the center, barely visible in the darkness, was an engraved outline of a coffin. The necromancer snapped his fingers, illuminating the long-abandoned sconces along the wall and lighting the chamber in electric blue. His footsteps echoed here, the room as silent as an abandoned cathedral. The necromancer waved his hand, conjuring a breeze that swept away the dust. The inscription along the floor was barely readable, written in a language lost to time. The necromancer made a note to have the deceased teach him. He knelt down, his cloak pooling out around him. Pressing his hands against the seam on the floor, the necromancer began his spell, the first forbidden one he'd found hidden among his dead master's books.
Redi ad corpus tuum, anima diu perdita, aligemur ossibus tuis, anima mea diu perdita, expergi gemini, vive eterum, donec amisa anima riditus.
As he spoke, the necromancer felt his vision fade. The cold crept in from the tips of his fingers, crawling up his arm with bits of frost clinging to his sleeves. He began to shiver, his breath leaving his body in thick clouds of condensation. He grit his teeth, pressing onward and keeping his hands against the ground. A thin, high-pitched wail mingled with the necromancer's own determined scream.
Mors damnabitur! Praecipio tibi vive!
With the loud crack, the cold in the chamber broke like ice upon a lake. The fire, nearly gone, crept slowly back to life, the flames hiding behind their sconces like curious children peeking at the forbidden scene before them. The necromancer wasn't aware of anything at first. With a pained hiss, he removed his hands from the ground. He stuffed them beneath his arms, rocking back and forth, urging the blood to return before he lost his fingers. The void sat beside him. The ritual had not bothered her in the slightest. Instead, her gaze lay fixed upon the ground, her eyes wide. Her white teeth flashed in the dark, chirping as the stone floor moved. Stone scratched against stone as the seams broke away, revealing the coffin lid. With a heavy thud, it fell away. Inside the coffin, hidden away beneath centuries of research, magic, and paperwork, lay a single human skeleton. Its skull rested upon a black silken pillow, and its hands were crossed over the chest. It was alone and unadorned, with the usual abundance of treasure long gone. The void poked her head down over the edge, curiously sniffing the top of the skeleton's head. The necromancer checked his hands. His fingers were blue, but had not gone black. He'd avoided losing his digits, for now. With a sigh of relief, he lowered himself into the burial chamber, ready to claim his prize. The skeleton's skull creaked along its spine, falling to one side. The necromancer could feel the ancient soul's attention, even as its eye sockets lay empty.
"Hello, Herbert," he said softly. "I've come to get you out of here."
The skeleton's head, still turned towards him, suddenly jerked to a questioning tilt. As far as the necromancer knew, Herbert, for that was the skeleton's proper name, had never left the necromantic archives. The skeleton was an important and original source for much of the necromantic arts, and as such, a carefully guarded secret. Even as a student, the necromancer had witnessed the depths of knowledge these bones possessed a single time. Paraded around as a fun way of introducing students to the necromantic arts, Herbert's true depth of knowledge was hidden. For who else could better warn against the forbidden rituals of necromancy than the one who'd experienced them firsthand?
"We've a lot of work to do," the necromancer continued, grasping the skeleton's arms and pulling it to a sitting position.
Silver threads gleamed in the blue torchlight from above, knitting each bone together in place of ligaments and sinew.
and you're just the person I need to do it. The necromancer reached into his cloak, revealing an additional layer of carefully threaded netting. The skeleton didn't protest as its limbs were folded in half, leaving the skull peering out from between his 2 feet. The necromancer placed this unusual backpack over his shoulders underneath his cloak. Herbert's teeth rattled in his ear as the necromancer climbed out of the burial chamber. The Void eyed her new traveling companion with suspicion, backing away slowly from them both until she was certain the skeleton wasn't going to fall apart on her. She looked to the necromancer, slowly blinking her large green eyes. "Lead the way, Void," the necromancer said, hefting the Herbert sack higher onto his shoulders. The familiar meowed in agreement, spinning towards the entrance with a flick of her tail. The necromancer didn't bother replacing the coffin lid and dismissed the blue flames with a flick of his wrist. There were a number of moral quandaries in the profession of necromancy, but theft wasn't one of them. Without a necromancer to speak to the dead, the coffin may as well remain empty. With the Void in front, the necromancer and his prize made their way through the obsidian halls. He picked up pace now, following his steps from before. The archives held little for him now with its greatest prize in his grasp. "You're awfully quiet, Herbert," said the necromancer. "Have you nothing to say after centuries of silence?" A deep, breathy voice answered in his ear.
"Yoksuyalkainen."
"Is that all?" The necromancer glanced over his shoulder. The necromancer muttered the word to himself as he walked, racking his brain for what it meant. "Yes, well, we'll get to that later, I suppose. Shall we have a little light?" He reached into his cloak pocket for his candle, lighting it and raising it over his head. He saw the legs first, hundreds of spindly saplings bent at sharp angles, stretched across at least 5 columns of the archive's shelves. The limbs led to a thick, striped tree trunk body over 6 feet long. There, at the front, stretched 2 long antennae, searching and seeking through the dark, leading its prey towards its sharp fangs and jet-black eyes. The skeleton's breathy voice was pleased.
"Yoksuyalkainen."
The necromancer took a large gulp. The faded lettering INDEEC had been correct, despite breaking the code word. The final magical protection wasn't another divination circle at all. It was conjuration, and it had summoned a nightmare. The Void hissed at his feet, her fur raised to vicious spikes. The monstrous centipede's antennae twitched, moving towards them until the long tendrils were but inches away from the necromancer's face. He raised his hands in mock surrender.
"Pulustaminoa, kuleden arkisto."
His hands clapped together, echoing like thunder out through the archives. Sparks of electric blue necromantic magic flew from him in a shower of embers, each glimmer scattering off and landing onto the shelves near him and beyond. The monstrous centipede recoiled, its jaws clacking in distress from the sudden light. Nothing caught flame. Instead, the necromantic archives were brought to life. Over 1,000 undead drew breath once more, their breathy wails calling out.
"Who dares disturb me? Where am I? Cure vigilavi! Death to the one who wakes the sleeping!"
The necromancer grabbed the Void by the scruff of her neck and ran. The magic of necromancy dealt with emotions. The more heightened the emotion, the stronger the spell. The necromancer let his terror, determination, and sheer desire for escape bleed from him, reanimating every skull, tibia, and coffin that he passed. Glass coffin lids shattered as grasping skeletal hands burst through. Skulls leapt off the shelves, their teeth chattering angrily as they snapped at his heels. A distant roar told him that the griffins were awake and hungry. Through all of this, the centipede gave chase. With its myriad of limbs, it skittered over the chaos, its body twisting and dodging the broken glass. Its antennae stretched in front of him, intent and searching for his prey. The skeleton jostling on the necromancer's back was less than helpful.
Be careful, you who seek to knot life's threads to bone.
The necromancer reached back a hand and gave the skull a slap.
Not now!
The void yowled in agreement, digging her claws into the necromancer's arm as she was jostled about. There was a glimmer of silver. The necromancer ducked just in time as a massive broadsword swung towards his head, burying itself in the wood beyond.
I shall have my vengeance!
The voice echoed from within a 7-foot-tall suit of armor, dust flying off of it as it swung again.
Not me, Immortuistaltus! The necromancer shouted. Get the monster!
The shelves shuddered as the centipede screamed. There was a tearing sound as the centipede quickly lost its legs to the reaching undead. A dark shadow swooped overhead, sending dust flying with the gust from its glittering black wing. It slammed into the monstrous centipede with a screech of its own, knocking it off the tops of the shelves. The dead were waiting on the ground below. The necromancer shoved the suit of armor towards the fray and kept running until the chaos behind him fell silent as the fog consumed him. For several steps, he could only hear his labored breathing. The dead were not usually so lively. He took his flask from a cloak pocket, gulped down the water inside, and wiped his chin as he walked. Herbert began to speak again.
Thwack, toss, thump, thud. Thwack, toss, thump, thud.
The blasted skeleton was mimicking the sound of a gravedigger's shovel. If your goal is to frighten me, the necromancer said through gritted teeth, it won't work.
Down, down to underground, 6 feet under, soil to drown.
The void crawled out from the necromancer's cloak, up his shoulders, and batted at the skull in her own annoyance. Leave him, said the necromancer. We're in a hurry. He picked up his pace, finding the steps that led upward into the evocation chamber. He stood at the base, staring up at the small pinprick of light above them. It wouldn't be long before the archivists and scribes found him. However, if his luck held, they would be too distracted reorganizing the mess that he left behind to follow. The archivists loved to warn new students of the consequences that would befall them should they fall out of line. Everyone had heard the rumors of the enchanted bookworms that would gnaw through your insides. But the true punishment was that those who stole from the necromantic archives were doomed to become a part of the collection, the very dead collection. The necromancer did not want to die, nor did he have any intention of staying here longer than necessary. His time for being quiet had long run out. Now, he simply needed to get out. He repeated his spell from earlier as the smell of burnt air crept around him. Then, in an embrace of light, the necromancer shot upwards. He kept an eye out for flame, but the evocation magic had changed. Instead, it grew colder as he ascended, threatening to freeze even the lightning with its icy embrace. The bones strapped to his back stung with a vicious frost, reaching him from beneath his heavy cloak. But the light above grew closer and closer, and with one final push, the necromancer broke through. He landed hard on the steps around it, only to slip down the stairs now covered in black ice. His fingernails scraped and scratched at the surface before he finally came to a halt, with his feet still dangling over the edge of the hole he'd flown out of. The void meowed mournfully, sitting uncomfortably on the cold steps in front of the necromancer. Her front paws rested on her tail to try and keep warm. He got to his feet, but just as he did, Herbert lurched backward.
Down, down to underground!
The skeleton had managed to turn his hands around at the wrists, digging his pointy grip into the necromancer's sides with malice.
Silentium, cavader!
The necromancer shouted, barely keeping his footing on the slick steps. He wrenched himself forward, pushing past the pain and up the stairs, but even the spell could not calm the agitated skeleton. It was too close, and the necromancer's own emotions were far from controlled.
I've come too far to turn back now.
Pushing past the pain, the necromancer climbed forward. The enchantment magic fluttered around him like an irritating gnat as he circled the stairs once, twice, and three times. Then, finally, he saw the marking of the bird. He placed his hand upon it in thanks before smudging it out.
"Void," he said as the stairway turned into stars. "We don't have much time."
The void meowed in agreement, her voice echoing among possibilities and time. She took hold of his cloak with her teeth, leading him onward as if he was a wayward kitten. It was dizzying to see the endless stretch of stars. Galaxies shrank and grew. Suns were born and then sucked away into oblivion. The necromancer felt so very, very small. Was he certain of what he was doing? Would it even matter? This skeleton was proving more trouble than it was worth. What if Herbert was just another dead end? What if he'd done all of this for nothing? The questions prodded at his mind, slowing him down until he came to a stop. A sudden, unyielding wave of apathy and melancholy flooded his senses. The void's angry screams were distant, but her teeth were still sharp. With a flash of bright white fangs, the void bit down on the necromancer's calf. With a hiss of his own, the necromancer recoiled and came back to himself. He bent down to scoop up his familiar, pressing his face into her inky black fur.
"Thank you, void."
The cat squirmed in his grasp, eager to be let down and on their way.
"I don't know what came over me," he said, glancing over at the unusually silent skeleton over his shoulder.
The void meowed in his face, her ears twitching back to listen to something up ahead. With his mind his own again, the necromancer set the void back down into space. He kept his eyes trained on the black void at his feet, following the small, moving black hole through the dangerous starry tides. He heard them when he reached the stairs. There was shouting, the sound of clattering bones, and bursts of fire. The reason for his sudden apathy became clear. The magic of the archivists and scribes was carefully guarded from all magically inclined students, for obvious reasons. They preferred to call it a science, but the necromancer had felt their demonstrations before. If a necromancer's power was in their emotions, then the scribes sought to muffle them like a blanket over a flame. The archivists were coming. They must have realized something was amiss, some deep-set alarm that allowed them to know what was taking place in the furthest levels of the archive.
"Some bury their secrets," Herbert said. "Some secrets bury us."
Thinking quickly, the necromancer pulled up his hood over his own head and Herbert's. If the archivists hadn't made it any further, it meant that they were still kept busy by the skeletons of the necromantic protections up ahead. He intended to keep them busy. The necromantic protection circle was in chaos. Half a dozen archivists were battling the skeleton horde. With their traditional staves and one smart enough to wield a sword, they were holding their own, but barely. It was easy enough to leap into the fray. The necromancer took hold of one skeleton by the collarbone, making a show of pulling it off on an archivist before throwing it haphazardly into another that had just gotten free. He helped the archivist, a young man in his early 20s, to his feet.
"There's too many of them," he told him. "You have to leave now."
It was at this time that Herbert decided to join in. The necromancer shouted out in pain as the skeleton's grip pierced his sides again. With no muscle to lend him any strength, Herbert resorted to scrabbling at it, scratching at the necromancer's back like a rabid animal.
"Thieves and liars! The Eighth Circle waits for you!"
The necromancer fell backwards, staggering away from the archivist.
"Get out, you idiots! Get out!"
He needed to escape, and fast. It had been years since the archives had hosted a necromancer. He hoped that meant they couldn't tell one spell from another.
"Certe prome mortui, damiare!"
The spell quickly took hold, renewing the skeleton's fight against the archivists. Skulls cracked back into place, crushed finger bones reformed, and the telltale blue light of necromancy shone brighter in their empty sockets.
"Come, void!"
the necromancer cried, running away from the fray. He took the stairs two at a time, willing himself to remember despite the dark. He stumbled over a metal bucket as he broke through the illusion, sending it flying down the stairs with loud metallic clangs. He was so close now. He ran through the sixth level, past the frosted glass in the fifth level, up to the fourth, where the echoes of his frantic footsteps rang out as loud as a church bell. He ran past the empty funeral parlors of the third floor, ran through the offices on the second, ignoring the shouts for him to stop. The first level flew by in a blur as his focus lay on the beam of light at the top of the final set of stairs. Herbert's grip loosened, the spells of the archives fading, as he offered one final warning.
Death always comes for its own.
Not for me. The necromancer went towards the light until it encompassed him entirely.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Skullduggery by Beverly Toomey, narrated by Peter Franson of Christian Geek Central. If you want to read more by Beverly, go to bevtoomey.wordpress.com to find more of her books. If you sign up for her newsletter, you'll get an ebook copy of the story you heard today, but you'll also want to check out her debut novel, which just released this month, called The Necromancer's Apprentice, which obviously brings back the mysterious necromancer from today's story, along with a young boy desperate to bring back his mother. If you enjoyed listening to Pater narrate the story, you might also enjoy listening to his audio dramas at spiritblade.com or his podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. Beverly's story is one of the many applications that has shown up in my inbox. I love being able to share stories from authors who have applied because they tend to be the most excited to have their story featured. If you've wanted to hear your story come to life with narration, please consider applying. Or if you have a favorite author who you think I should feature, please send in recommendations. I have links in the show notes to help you find the form for applications and the contact form for recommendations. As always, thank you all for listening and happy reading.